Watch his tongue, said Glockter. We want him talking.
Don't worry, muttered Severard, peering into the assassin's mouth. He ducked back suddenly. Ah! His breath smells like shit.
A shame, but I am hardly surprised. Clean living is rarely a priority for hired killers.
Glockter got slowly to his feet, limped round the table.
Now then, he murmured, one hand hovering over his instruments, where to begin?
He picked up a mounted needle and craned forward, his other hand gripped tight around the top of his cane, probing carefully at the killer's teeth.
Not a pretty set, to be sure. I do believe I'd rather have my teeth than his.
Dear me, these are in a terrible state, rotten through and through. That's why your breath stinks so badly. There's no excuse for it, a man of your age.
Ah!
Yelped the prisoner as Glockter touched a nerve. He tried to speak, but with the tongs in place, he made less sense than Practical Frost.
Quiet now. You've had your chance to talk. Perhaps you'll get another later. I haven't decided.
Glockter put the needle back down on the table, shaking his head sadly.
Your teeth are a fucking disgrace. Revolting. I do declare they're just about falling out on their own.
Do you know, he said as he took the little hammer and chisel from the table,
I do believe you'd be better off without them.
Chapter 15 Flatheads. Grey morning time, out in the cold, wet woods, and the dogman was just sat there, thinking about how things used to be better. Sat there, minding the spit, turning it round every once in a while, and trying not to get too nervous with the waiting. Tulduru wasn't helping any with that. He was striding up and down the grass, round the old stones and back, wearing his great boots out, about as patient as a wolf on heat. Dogman watched him stomping, clomp, clomp, clomp. He'd learned a long time ago that great fighters are only good for one thing, fighting. At pretty much everything else, and at waiting in particular, they're fucking useless.
Why don't you sit yourself down, Tull? Muttered Dogman. There's stones aplenty for the purpose. Warmer here by the fire and all. Rest those flapping feet of yours, you're getting me twitchy.
Sit me down,
rumbled the giant, coming up and looming over the dogman like a great bloody house.
How can I sit, or you either?
He frowned across the ruins and into the trees from under his great heavy brows.
You sure this is the place?
This is the place.
Dogman stared round at the broken stones, hoping like hell that it was. He couldn't deny there was no sign of them yet.
They'll be here, don't you worry.
So long as they ain't all got themselves killed, he thought, but he had the sense not to say it. He'd spent enough time marching with Tulduru Thunderhead to know you don't get that man stirred up, unless you want a broken head, of course.
They better be here soon as all.
Tull's bloody great hands curled up into fists fit to break rocks with.
I got no taste for just sitting here arse in the wind.
Nor do I neither,
said the dogman, showing his palms and doing his best to keep everything gentle.
But don't you fret on it, big lad. They'll be along soon enough, just the way we planned. This is the place.
He eyed the hog crackling away, dripping some nice gravy in the fire. His mouth was watering good now, his nose was full of the smell of meat, and something else beside. Just a whiff. He looked up, sniffing.
You smell something? Asked Tull, peering into the woods.
Something, maybe.
The dogman leaned down and took a hold on his bow.
What is it? Shanker?
Not sure. Could be.
He sniffed the air again. Smelled like a man, and a mighty sour-smelling one at that.
I could have killed the fucking pair of you!
Dogman span about, half falling over and near fumbling his bow while he did it. Black Dow wasn't 10 strides behind him, downwind, creeping over to the fire with a nasty grin. Grim was at his shoulder, face blank as a wall, as always.
"You bastards!" bellowed Tull. "You near made me shit with your sneaking around!"
"Good," sneered Dow.
"You could lose some fucking lot."
Dogman took a long breath and tossed his bow back down. Some relief to know they were in the right spot after all, but he could have done without the scare. He'd been jumpy since he saw Logan go over the edge of that cliff. Roll right on over, and not a thing anyone could do about it. Could happen to anyone, any time. Death, and that was a fact. Grim clambered over the broken stones and sat himself down on one next to the dogman, gave him the barest of nods.
"Me?" barked Dow, shoving past Tull and flopping down beside the fire, ripping a leg of the carcass and tearing into it with his teeth.
And that was it. That was all the greeting after a month or more apart.
"A man with friends is rich indeed," muttered the dogman out the corner of his mouth.
"What's that?"
spat Dow, cold eyes sliding round, his mouth full of pig, his dirty, stubbly chin all shiny with grease. Dogman showed his palms again.
"Nothing to take offence at."
He'd spent enough time marching with Black Dow to know you might as well cut your own neck as make that evil bastard angry.
"Any trouble why we were split up?"
he asked, looking to change the subject. Grim nodded.
"Some fucking flatheads," snarled Dow, spraying bits of meat in Dogman's face. "They're bloody everywhere."
He pointed the hog's leg across the fire like it was a blade.
"I've taken enough of this shit. I'm going back south. It's too bloody cold by half, and fucking flatheads everywhere. Bastards, I'm going south."
"You scared?" asked Tull.
Dow turned to look up at him with a big yellow grin, and the dogman winced. It was a damn fool of a question, that. He'd never been scared in his life, Black Dow. Didn't know what it was to be scared.
"Feared of a few shanker? Me?"
He gave a nasty laugh.
"We done some work on 'em while you two been snoring. Gave some of 'em warm beds to sleep in. Too warm by half."
"Burned 'em," muttered Grim.
That was a full day's talk out of him already.
"Burned the whole fucking pile of 'em,"
hissed Dow, grinning like he never heard such a joke as corpses on fire.
"They don't scare me, big lad, no more than you do. But I don't plan to sit here waiting for 'em neither. Just so Free Trees has time to haul his flabby old arse out of bed. I'm going south."
And he tore off another mouthful of meat.
"Who's got the flabby arse now?"
Dogman cracked a grin as he saw Three Trees striding over towards the fire, and he started up and grabbed the old boy by the hand. He had Fawley the weakest with him and all, and Dogman clapped the little man on the back as he came past. Nearly knocked him over. He was that pleased to see they were all alive and made it through another month. Didn't hurt to have some leadership round the fire, neither. Everyone looked happy for once, smiling and pressing hands and all the rest. Everyone but Dow, of course. He just sat there, staring at the fire, sucking on his bone, face sour as old milk.
"Right good to see you again, lads, and all in one piece."
Three Trees hefted his big round shield off his shoulder and leant it up against a broken old bit of wall.
"How have you been?"
"Fucking cold," said Dow, not even looking up. "We're going south."
Dogman sighed. Back together for 10 heartbeats, and the bickering was already started. It was going to be a tough crowd now, without Logan to keep things settled. A tough crowd and apt to get bloody. Three Trees wasn't rushing into anything, though. He took a moment to think on it, like always. He loved to take his moment, that one. That was what made him so dangerous.
"Going south, eh?"
said Three Trees after he'd chewed it over for a minute.
"And just when did all this get decided?"
"Nothing's decided," said the dogman, showing his palms one more time. He reckoned he might be doing that a lot from now on. Tull Duru frowned down at Dow's back.
"Nothing at all,"
he rumbled, mightily annoyed at having his mind made up for him.
"Nothing is right," said Three Trees, slow and steady as the grass growing. I don't recall this being no voting band.
Dow took no time at all to think about that. He never took time, that one. That was what made him so dangerous. He leapt up, flinging the bone onto the ground, squaring up to Three Trees with a fighting look.
I say, south,
he snarled, eyes bulging like bubbles on a stew. Three Trees didn't back down a step. That wouldn't have been his way at all. He took his moment to think on it, course. Then he took a step forward of his own, so his nose and Dow's were almost touching.
If you wanted to say, you should have beaten Nine Fingers, he growled, instead of losing like the rest of us.
Black Dow's face turned dark as tar at that. He didn't like being reminded of losing.
The bloody Nine's gone back to the mud, he snarled. Dogman seen it, didn't ya?
Dogman had to nod.
Aye,
he muttered.
So that's the end of that. There's no reason for us to be pissing around here north of the mountains with flatheads crawling up our arses. I say south.
Nine Fingers may be dead, said Three Trees in Dow's face, but your debt ain't.
Why he saw fit to spare a man as worthless as you, I'll never know. But he named me as second,
and he tapped his big chest.
And that means I'm the one with the say, me and no other.
Dogman took a careful step back. The two of them were shaping up for blows, all right, and he'd no wish to get a bloody nose in all the confusion. It would hardly have been the first time. Fawley took a stab at keeping the peace.
Come on, boys, he said, all nice and soft. There's no need for this.
He might not have been much at killing, Fawley, but he was a damn good boy for stopping those that were from killing each other. Dogman wished him luck with it.
Come on, why don't you...
Shut your fucking hole, you, growled Dow,
one dirty finger stabbing Savage in Fawley's face.
What's your fucking say worth weakest? Leave him be,
rumbled Tull, holding his great fist up under Dow's chin,
or I'll give you something to shout about.
The Dogman could hardly look. Dow and Three Trees were always picking at each other. They got fired up quick and damped down quick. The Thunderhead was a different animal. Once that big ox got properly riled, there was no calming him, not without 10 strong men and a lot of rope. Dogman tried to think what Logan would have done. He'd have known how to stop 'em fighting, if he hadn't been dead.
Shit!
Shouted Dogman, jumping up from the fire all of a sudden.
There's fucking Shanker crawling all over us, and if we get through with them, there's always Bethard to think on. We've a world full of scores to settle without making more ourselves. Logan's gone, and Three Trees is second, and that's the only say I'll hear.
He did some jabbing with his own finger at no one in particular. Then he waited, hoping like hell that it had done the trick.
Aye, grunted Grim.
Fawley started nodding like a woodpecker.
Dogman's right. We need to fight each other like we need the cockroach. Three Trees is second. He's the chief now.
It was quiet for a moment, and Dow fixed the Dogman with that cold, empty, killing look, like the cat with the mouse between its paws. Dogman swallowed. A lot of men, most men even, wouldn't have dared meet no look like that from Black Dow. He got the name from having the blackest reputation in the north, with coming sudden in the black of night and leaving the villages behind him black from fire. That was the rumour, that was the fact. It took all the bones Dogman had not to stare at his boots. He was just ready to do it when Dow looked away, eyed the others, one at a time. Most men wouldn't have met that look, but these here weren't most men. You could never have hoped to meet a bloodier crowd, not anywhere under the sun. Not a one of them backed down, or even seemed to consider it. Apart from Fawley the weakest, of course, he was staring at the grass before his turn even came. Once Dow saw they were all against him, he cracked a happy smile, just as if there never was a problem.
Fair enough,
he said to Three Trees, the anger all seeming to drain away in an instant.
"What's it to be, then, Chief?"
Three Trees looked over at the woods. He sniffed and sucked at his teeth. He scratched at his beard, taking his moment to think on it. He looked each one of them over, considering.
"We go south," he said.
He smelled 'em before he saw 'em, but that was always the way with him. He had a good nose, did the dog man. That's how he got the name, after all. Being honest, though, anyone could have smelled 'em. They fucking stank. There were 12 down in the clearing, sitting, eating, grunting to each other in their nasty, dirty tongue, big yellow teeth sticking out everywhere, dressed in lumps of smelly fur and reeking hide and odd bits of rusty armour. Shanker.
"Fucking flatheads,"
Dogman muttered to himself. He heard a soft hiss behind, turned round to see Grim peering up from behind a bush. He held out his open hand to say stop, tapped the top of his skull to say flatheads, held up his fist, then two fingers to say 12, and pointed back down the track towards the others. Grim nodded and faded away into the woods. The dogman took one last look at the shanker, just to make sure they were all still unwary. They were, so he slipped back down the tree and off.
"They're camped round the road. 12 that I saw, maybe more."
"They're looking for us?" asked Three Trees.
"Maybe, but they ain't looking too hard."
"Could we get around them?" asked Fawley, always looking to miss out on a fight. Dow spat onto the ground, always looking to get into one.
12 is nothing. We can do them all right."
The dog man looked over at Three Trees, thinking it out, taking his moment. 12 wasn't nothing, and they all knew it. But it might be better to deal with them than leave them free and easy behind.
"What's it to be, Chief?" asked Tull.
Three Trees set his jaw.
"Weapons."
A fighting man's a fool that don't keep his weapons clean and ready. Dogman had been over his no more than an hour before. Still, you won't be killed for checking 'em, while you might be for not doing it. There was the hissing of steel on leather, the clicking of wood and the clanking of metal. Dogman watched Grim twang at his bowstring, check over the feathers on his shafts. He watched Tulduru run his thumb down the edge of his big heavy sword, almost as tall as Fawley was, clucking like a chicken at a spot of rust. He watched Black Dow rubbing a rag on the head of his axe, looking at the blade with eyes soft as a lover's. He watched Three Trees tugging at the buckles on his shield straps, swishing his blade through the air, bright metal glinting. The dogman gave a sigh, pulled the straps on his guard tighter round his left wrist, checked the wood of his bow for cracks. He made sure all his knives were where they should be. You can never have too many knives, Logan had told him once, and he'd taken it right to heart. He watched Fawley checking his short sword with clumsy hands, his mouth chewing away, eyes all wet with fear. That got his own nerves jumping, and he glanced round at the others. Dirty, scarred, frowns, and lots of beard. There was no fear there, no fear at all. But that was nothing to be shamed at. Different men have different ways, Logan had told him once, and you have to have fear to have courage. He'd taken that right to heart as well. He walked over to Fawley and gave him a clap on the shoulder.
"You have to have fear to have courage," he said.
"That's so?"
"So they say, and it's a good thing too."
The dogman leaned close so no one else could hear.
"'Cause I'm about ready to shit."
He reckoned that's what Logan would have done, and now that Logan had gone back to the mud, it fell to him. Fawley gave half a smile, but it slumped pretty fast, and he looked more scared than ever. There's only so much you can do.
"Right, boys," said Three Trees once the gear was all checked and stowed in its proper places. "Here's how we'll get it done. Grim, Dogman, opposite sides of their camp out in the trees. Wait for the signal, then shoot any flathead with a bow. Failing that, whatever's closest."
"Right you are, Chief," said the dogman. Grim gave a nod. "Tull, You and me take the front, but wait for the signal, eh?
Aye,
rumbled the giant. Dow, you and Fawley at the back. You come on when you see us go.
But this time, you wait for us to go,
hissed Three Trees, stabbing with his thick finger.
Course, chief.
Dow shrugged his shoulders, just as though he always did as he was told.
Right then, there it is, said Three Trees. Anyone still confused? Any empty heads round the fire?
The dog man mumbled and shook his head. They all did.
Fair enough. Just one more thing.
The old boy leaned forward, looking at each of them one by one.
Wait for the fucking signal.
It wasn't till the dog man was hid behind a bush with his bow in his hand and a shaft at the ready that he realized. He'd no idea what the signal was. He looked down at the shanker, still sat there all unwary, grunting and shouting and banging about. By the dead he needed to piss. Always needed to piss before a fight. Had anyone said the signal? He couldn't remember.
Shit,
he whispered. And just then Dow came hurtling out from the trees, axe in one hand, sword in the other.
Fucking flatheads!
He screamed, giving the nearest a fearsome big blow in the head and splattering blood across the clearing. Insofar as you could tell what a shanker was thinking, these ones looked greatly surprised. Dogman reckoned that would have to do for a signal. He let loose his shaft at the nearest flathead, just reaching for a big club, and watched it catch through the armpit with a satisfying thunk.
Ha!
He shouted. He saw Dow spit another through the back with his sword, but there was a big shanker now with a spear ready to throw. An arrow came looping out of the trees and stuck it through the neck, and it let go a squeal and sprawled out backwards. That grim was a damn good shot. Now Three Trees came roaring from the scrub on the other side of the clearing, catching them off guard. He barged one flathead in the back with his shield, and it sprawled face first into the fire. He hacked at another with his sword. The dogman let go a shaft, and it stuck a shanker in its gut. It dropped down on its knees, and a moment later, Tull took its head off with a great swing of his sword. The fight was joined and moving quick. Chop, grunt, scrape, rattle. There was blood flying and weapons swinging and bodies dropping too fast for the dogman to try an arrow at. The three of them had the last few hemmed in, squawking and gibbering. Tal Duru was swinging his big sword around, keeping them at bay. Three Trees darted in and chopped the legs out from under one, and Dow cut another down as it looked round. The last one squawked and made a run for the trees. Dogman shot at it, but he was hurrying and he missed. The arrow almost hit Dow in the leg, but luckily he didn't notice. It had almost got away into the bushes, then it squealed and fell back, thrashing. Fawley had stabbed it, hiding in the scrub.
I got one! He yelled.
It was quiet for a moment while the dogman scrambled down toward the clearing, and they all looked round to see if there was anything left to fight. Then Black Dow gave a great bellow, shaking his bloody weapons over his head.
We fucking killed him! You nearly killed us all, you damn fool! Shouted Three Trees.
Aye?
What about the fucking signal?
I thought I heard you shout.
I never.
Did you not?
Asked Dow, looking greatly puzzled.
What was the signal, anyhow?
Three Trees gave a sigh and put his head in his hands. Fawley was still staring down at his sword.
I got one, he said again.
Now that the fight was over, the dogman was about ready to burst, so he turned round and pissed against a tree.
We killed him,
shouted Tull, clapping him on the back.
Watch out,
yelled Dogman, as piss went all down his leg. They all had a laugh at him over that. Even Grim had himself a little chuckle. Tull shook Three Trees by the shoulder.
We killed them, chief.
We killed these, aye, he said, looking sour. But there'll be plenty more, thousands of them. They won't be happy staying up here, neither, up here beyond the mountains. Sooner or later they'll be going south. Maybe in the summer when the pass is clear, maybe later. But it's not long off.
The dogman glanced at the others,
all shifty and worried after that little speech. The glow of victory hadn't lasted too long. It never did. He looked round at the dead flatheads on the ground, broken and bloody, sprawled and crumpled. It seemed a hollow little victory they'd had now.
"Shouldn't we try and tell them, Three Trees?" he asked. "Shouldn't we try and warn someone?"
"Aye," Three Trees gave a sad little smile. "But oh."
Chapter 16. The Course of True Love. Giselle trudged miserably across the grey Agriant with his fencing steels in his hand, yawning, stumbling, grumbling, still horribly sore from his endless run the day before. He hardly saw anyone as he dragged himself to his daily bullying from Lord Marshal Verus. Apart from the odd premature tweeting of some bird in amongst the gables and the tired scraping of his own reluctant boots, all was quiet. No one was up at this time. No one should be up at this time, him least of all. He hauled his aching legs through the archway and up the tunnel. The sun was barely above the horizon, and the courtyard beyond was full of deep shadows. Squinting into the darkness, he could see Verus sat at the table waiting for him. Damn it. He had hoped to be early for once. Did the old bastard sleep at all?
"Lord Marshal!"
shouted Giselle, breaking into a half-hearted jog.
"No, not today."
A shiver crept up Giselle's neck. It was not the voice of his fencing master, but there was something unpleasantly familiar about it.
"Marshal Verus is busy with more important matters this morning."
Inquisitor Glockter was sitting in the shadows by the table and smiling up with his revolting gap-toothed grin. Giselle's skin prickled with disgust. It was hardly what one needed first thing in the morning. He slowed to a reluctant walk and stopped next to the table.
"You will doubtless be pleased to learn that there will be no running, or swimming, or beam, or heavy bar today," said the cripple. "You won't even be needing those."
He waved his cane at Giselle's fencing steels.
"We will just be having a little chat, that is all."
The idea of 5 punishing hours with Verus seemed suddenly very appealing, but Giselle was not about to show his discomfort. He tossed his steels onto the table with a loud rattle and sat down carelessly in the other chair, Glockter regarding him from the shadows all the while. Giselle had it in mind to stare him into some kind of submission, but it proved a vain attempt. After a couple of seconds looking at that wasted face, that empty grin, those fever-bright, sunken eyes, he began to find the tabletop most interesting.
"So, tell me, Captain, why did you take up fencing?"
A game, then. A private hand of cards with only 2 players. And everything that was said would get back to Verus, that was sure. Giselle would have to play his hand carefully, keep his cards close and his wits about him. "For my own honour, for that of my family, for that of my king," he said coldly. The cripple could try and find fault with that answer.
"Ah, so it's for the benefit of your nation that you put yourself through this. What a fine citizen you must be. What selflessness. What an example to us all."
Glockter snorted.
"Please. If you must lie, at least pick a lie that you yourself find convincing. That answer is an insult to us both."
How dare this toothless has-been take that tone with him? Giselle's legs gave a twitch. He was right on the point of getting up and walking away, Verus and his hideous stooge be damned. But he caught the cripple's eye as he put his hands on the arms of the chair to push himself up. Glockter was smiling at him. A mocking sort of smile. To leave would be to admit defeat somehow. Why did he take up fencing anyway?
"My father wanted me to do it."
"So, so, my heart brims with sympathy. The loyal son, bound by his strong sense of duty, is forced to fulfill his father's ambitions." A familiar tale, like a comfortable old chair we all love to fit in. Tell him what they want to hear, eh? A better answer, but just as far from the truth.
Why don't you tell me, then? Snapped Giselle sulkily, since you seem to know so much about it.
All right, I will. Men don't fence for their king, or for their families, or for the exercise either, before you try that one on me. They fence for the recognition, for the glory. They fence for their own advancement. They fence for themselves. I should know. You should know.
Giselle snorted. It hardly seems to have worked in your case.
He regretted it immediately. Damn his mouth. It got him in all kinds of trouble. But Glockter only flashed his disgusting smile again. It was working well enough until I found my way into the Emperor's prisons. What's your excuse, liar?
Giselle didn't like the way this conversation was going. He was too used to easy victories at the card table and poor players. His skills had dulled. Better to sit this one out until he got the measure of his new opponent. He clamped his jaw shut and said nothing. It takes hard work, of course, winning a contest. You should have seen our mutual friend Colum West working. He sweated at it for months, running around while the rest of us laughed at him. A jumped-up idiot commoner competing with his betters. That's what we all thought. Blundering through his forms, stumbling about on the beam, being made a fool of again and again, day after day. But look at him now. Glockter tapped his cane with a finger. And look at me. Seems he had the last laugh, eh, Captain? Just shows what you can achieve with a little hard work. You've twice the talent he had, and the right blood. You don't have to work one-tenth so hard, but you refuse to work at all.
Giselle wasn't about to let that one pass.
Not work at all? Don't I put myself through this torture every day?
Torture? Asked Glockter sharply. Giselle realized too late his unfortunate choice of words.
Well, he mumbled, I meant...
I know more than a little about both fencing and torture. Believe me when I say... and the Inquisitor's grotesque grin grew wider still, that they're two quite different things.
Said Giselle, still off balance.
You have the ambitions and the means to realize them. A little effort would do it. A few months' hard work, then you would probably never need to try at anything again in your life, if that's what you want. A few short months, and you're set.
Glockter licked at his empty gums. Barring accidents, of course.
It's a great chance you've been offered. I'd take it if I were you. But I don't know. Maybe you're a fool as well as a liar.
I'm no fool, said Giselle coldly.
It was the best he could do. Glockter raised an eyebrow, then winced, leaning heavily on his cane as he slowly pushed himself to his feet.
Give it up, if you like. By all means, sit around for the rest of your days and drink and talk shit with the rest of the junior officers. There are a lot of people who'd be more than happy to live that life. A lot of people who haven't had the chances you've had. Give it up. Lord Marshal Varuth will be disappointed, and Major West, and your father, and so on. But please believe me when I say...
and he leaned down, still smiling his horrible smile, that I couldn't care less. Good day, Captain Luther. And Glockter limped off toward the archway. After that less than delightful interview, Giselle found himself with a few hours of unexpected free time on his hands. But he was scarcely in the frame of mind to enjoy it. He wandered the empty streets, squares, and gardens of the Acreont, thinking grimly on what the cripple had said to him, cursing the name of Glockter, but unable to quite push the conversation from his mind. He turned it over and over, every phrase, constantly coming up with new things that he should have said, if only he had thought of them at the time.
Ah, Captain Luthor!
Giselle started and looked up. A man he did not recognize was sitting on the dewy grass beneath a tree, smiling up at him, a half-eaten apple in his hand.
The early morning is the perfect time for a stroll, I find. Calm and grey and clean and empty. It's nothing like the gaudy pinkness of evening time. All that clutter, all those people coming and going. How can one think in amongst all that nonsense? And now I see you are of the same mind. How delightful.
He took a big crunching bite out of the apple.
Do I know you? Oh, no, no,
said the stranger, getting to his feet and brushing some dirt from the seat of his trousers.
Not yet. My name is Sulfur. Yoru Sulfur.
Really? And what brings you to the Agriant?
You might say I have come on a diplomatic mission.
Giselle looked him over, trying to place his origin.
A mission from?
From my master, of course, said Sulfur unhelpfully.
His eyes were different colours, Giselle noticed. An ugly and off-putting characteristic, he rather thought.
And your master is?
A very wise and powerful man.
He stripped the core with his teeth and tossed it away into the bushes, wiping his hands on the front of his shirt.
I see you've been fencing.
Giselle glanced down at his steels.
Yes, he said, realizing that he had finally come to a decision. But for the last time, I'm giving it up.
Oh, dear me, no.
The strange man seized Giselle by the shoulder.
Oh, dear me, no, you mustn't.
What?
No, no, my master would be horrified if he knew, horrified. Give up fencing, and you give up more than that. This is how one comes to the notice of the public, you see. They decide, in the end. There's no nobility without the commoners. No nobility at all. They decide.
What? Giselle glanced around the park, hoping to catch sight of a guard, so he could notify him that a dangerous madman was loose in the Agriant.
No, you mustn't give it up. I won't hear of it. No, indeed. I'm sure that you'll stick with it after all. You must.
Giselle shook Sulfur's hand off his shoulder.
Who are you?
Sulfur. Yoru Sulfur at your service. See you again, Captain, at the contest, if not before.
And he waved over his shoulder as he strolled off. Giselle stared after him, mouth slightly open.
Damn it!
He shouted, throwing his steels down on the grass. Everyone seemed to want to take a hand in his business today, even crazy strangers in the park. As soon as he thought it was late enough, Giselle went to call on Major West. You could always be sure of a sympathetic ear with him, and Giselle was hoping that he might be able to manipulate his friend into breaking the bad news to Lord Marshal Varouz. That was a scene that he wanted no part of, if he could possibly avoid it. He knocked on the door and waited. He knocked again. The door opened.
Captain Luthor! What an almost unbearable honor!
Ardy, muttered Giselle, somewhat surprised to find her here.
It's good to see you again.
For once, he actually meant it. She was interesting, is what she was. It was a new and refreshing thing for him to actually be interested in what a woman had to say. And she was damn good-looking, too, there was no denying it, and seemed prettier every time he saw her. Nothing could ever happen between them, of course, what with West being his friend and all. But there was no harm in looking, was there?
Is your brother around?
She threw herself carelessly down onto the settle against the wall, one leg stretched out, looking very sour.
He's out. Gone out. Always busy. Much too busy for me.
There was a definite flush to her cheek. Giselle's eye lighted on the decanter. The stopper was out and the wine was halfway down.
Are you drunk?
Somewhat.
She squinted at a half-full wine glass at her elbow.
But mostly, I'm just bored.
It's not even 10.
Can't I be bored before 10?
You know what I mean.
Leave the moralizing to my brother. It suits him better. And have a drink.
She waved her hand at the bottle.
You look like you need one.
Well, that was true enough. He poured himself a glass and sat down in a chair facing Adi, while she regarded him with heavy-lidded eyes. She took her own glass from the table. There was a thick book lying next to it, face down.
"How's the book?"
asked Giselle.
"The Fall of the Master Maker in 3 volumes. They say it's one of the great classics of history."
"A lot of boring rubbish," she snorted derisively. "Full of wise magi, stern knights with mighty swords, and ladies with mightier bosoms. Magic, violence, and romance in equal measure. Utter shit."
She slapped the book off the table, and it tumbled onto the carpet, pages flapping.
"There must be something you can find to keep busy."
"Really? What would you suggest?"
"My cousins do a lot of embroidery."
"Fuck yourself."
"Hmm," said Giselle, smiling. The swearing no longer seemed half so offensive as it had done when they first met.
"What did you do at home in Angland?"
"Oh, home." Her head dropped against the back of the settle.
"I thought I was bored there. I could hardly wait to come here to the bright center of things. Now I can hardly wait to go back. Marry some farmer, have a dozen brats. At least I'd get some conversation that way."
She closed her eyes and sighed.
"But Colin won't let me. He feels responsible now that our father's dead. Thinks it's too dangerous. He'd rather I didn't get slaughtered by the Northmen, but that's about where his sense of responsibility ends. It certainly doesn't extend to spending 10 minutes together with me. So it looks like I'm stuck here, with all you arrogant snobs."
Giselle shifted uncomfortably in his seat. "He seems to manage."
"Oh, yes," snorted Adi. "Colin West, he's a damn fine fellow. Won a contest, don't you know? First through the breach at Ulrioch, wasn't he? No breeding at all. Never be one of us, but a damn fine fellow for a commoner. Shame about that upstart sister of his, though. Too clever by half. And they say she drinks," she whispered. "Doesn't know her place. Total disgrace. Best just to ignore her."
She sighed again.
"Yes, the sooner I go home, the happier everyone will be."
"I won't be happier."
"Damn, did he say that out loud?"
Adi laughed, none too pleasantly.
"Well, it's enormously noble of you to say so. Why aren't you fencing, anyway?"
"Marshal Veruz was busy today." He paused for a moment. "In fact, I had your friend Sandan Glockter as fencing master this morning."
"Really? What did he have to say for himself?"
"Various things. He called me a fool."
"Imagine that."
Giselle frowned.
"Yes, well, I'm as bored with fencing as you are with that book. That was what I wanted to talk to your brother about. I'm thinking of giving it up."
She burst out laughing, snorting, gurgling peals of it. Her whole body was shaking. Wine sloshed out of her glass and splattered across the floor.
"What's so funny?" he demanded.
"It's just..."
She wiped a tear from her eye.
"I had a bet with Colum. He was sure you'd stick at it, and now I'm 10 marks richer."
"I'm not sure that I like being the subject of your bet," said Giselle sharply.
"I'm not sure I give a damn."
"This is serious."
"No, it isn't," she snapped.
"For my brother, it was serious. He had to do it. No one even notices you if you don't have a Dan in your name, and who'd know better than me? You're the only person who's given me the time of day since I got here, and then only because Colum made you. I've precious little money and no blood at all, and that makes me less than nothing to the likes of you. The men ignore me, and the women cut me dead. I've got nothing here. Nothing and no one. And you think you've got the hard life? Please. I might take up fencing," she said bitterly. "Ask the Lord Marshal if he has space for a pupil, would you?
At least then I'd have someone to talk to.
Giselle blinked. That wasn't interesting. That was rude.
Hold on. You've no idea what it's like to...
Oh, stop whinging.
How old are you? 5? Why don't you go back to sucking on your mother's tit, infant?
He could hardly believe what he was hearing. How dare she?
My mother's dead, he said.
Ha! That should make her feel guilty, squeeze an apology out of her. It didn't.
Dead? Look here! At least she doesn't have to listen to your damn whining. You spoiled little rich boys are all the same. You get everything you could possibly want, then throw a tantrum because you have to pick it up yourself. You're pathetic. You make me fucking sick.
Giselle goggled. His face was burning, stinging, as if he'd been slapped. He'd rather have been slapped. He had never been spoken to like that in his life. Never. It was worse than Glockta, much worse, and far more unexpected. He realized his mouth was hanging half open. He snapped it shut, grinding his teeth together, slapped his glass down on the table, and got up to leave. He was turning to the door when it suddenly opened, leaving him and Major West staring at each other.
"Giselle," said West, looking at first simply surprised, and then, as he glanced over at his sister, sprawling on the settle, slightly suspicious. "What are you doing here?"
I came to see you, actually.
Oh, yes?
Yes. But it can wait. I've things to do.
And Giselle pushed past his friend and out into the corridor.
What was all that about? He heard West saying as he strode away from the room. Are you drunk?
With every step, Giselle's fury mounted until he was halfway to being strangled by it. He had been the victim of an assault, a savage and undeserved attack. He stopped in the corridor, trembling with rage, his breath snorting in his nose like he'd run 10 miles, his fists clenched painfully tight. And from a woman, too. A woman! And a bloody commoner! How dare she! He had wasted time on her, and laughed at her jokes and found her attractive. She should have been honored to be noticed.
That fucking bitch! He snarled to himself.
He had half a mind to go back and say it to her face, but it was too late. He stared around for something to hit. How to pay her back? How? Then it came to him. Prove her wrong. That would do it. Prove her wrong, and that crippled bastard Glockta, too. He'd show them how hard he could work. He'd show them he was no fool, no liar, no spoiled child. The more he thought about it, the more it made sense. He'd win this damn contest, is what he'd do. That'd wipe the smiles off their faces. He set off briskly down the corridor with a strange new feeling building in his chest. A sense of purpose. That was what it was. Perhaps it wasn't too late for a run. Chapter 17. How Dogs Are Trained. Practical Frost stood by the wall, utterly motionless, utterly silent, barely visible in the deep shadows, a part of the building. The albino hadn't moved an inch in an hour or more, hadn't shifted his feet, hadn't blinked, hadn't breathed that Glockta had noticed, his eyes fixed on the street before them. Glockta himself cursed, shifted uncomfortably, winced, scratched his face, sucked at his empty gums. What's keeping them? A few minutes more and I might fall asleep, drop into that stinking canal and drown. How very apt that would be. He watched the oily, smelly water below him flap and ripple. Body found floating by the docks, bloated by seawater and far, far beyond recognition. Frost touched his arm in the darkness, pointed down the street with a big white finger. 3 men were moving slowly toward them, walking with the slightly bow-legged stance of men who spend a lot of time aboard ship, keeping their balance on a swaying deck. So that's one half of our little party. Better late than never. The 3 sailors came halfway across the bridge over the canal, then stopped and waited, no more than 20 strides away. Glockter could hear the tone of their conversation, brash, confident, common accents. He shuffled slightly further into the shadows, clinging to the building. Now footsteps came from the opposite direction, hurried footsteps. Two more men appeared, walking quickly down the street. One, a very tall, thin fellow in an expensive-looking fur coat, was glancing suspiciously around him. That must be Gottfried Hornleck, Senior Mercer. Our man. His companion had a sword at his hip and was struggling with a big wooden trunk over one shoulder. Servant, or bodyguard, or both? He is of no interest. Glockter felt the hairs on the back of his neck prickling as they neared the bridge. Hornleck exchanged a few quick words with one of the sailors, a man with a big brown beard.
Ready?
He whispered to Frost. The practical nodded.
Hold! Shouted Glockter at the top of his voice. In the name of His Majesty!
Hornlack's servant spun round, dropping the trunk onto the bridge with a bang, hand moving toward his sword. There was a soft twang from the shadows on the other side of the road. The servant looked surprised, gave a snort, then toppled onto his face. Practical Frost strode swiftly out of the shadows, feet padding on the road. Hornlack stared down, wide-eyed, at the corpse of his bodyguard, then across at the hulking albino. He turned to the sailors.
Help me!
He cried.
Stop him!
Their leader smiled back.
I don't think so.
His two companions moved without hurry to block the bridge. The Mercer stumbled away, took a faltering step toward the shadows by the canal on the other side. Severard appeared from a doorway before him, flat bow rested across his shoulder. Replace the bow with a bunch of flowers, and he'd look as if he was on his way to a wedding. You'd never think that he just killed a man. Surrounded, Hornlack could only look around dumbly, eyes wide with fear and surprise as the two practicals approached, Glockter limping up behind them.
But I paid you!
Hornlack shouted desperately at the sailors.
You paid me for a berth, said their captain. Loyalty is extra.
Practical Frost's big white hand slapped down on the merchant's shoulder, forced him onto his knees. Severard strolled over to the bodyguard, wedged the dirty toe of his boot under the body, and rolled it over. The corpse stared up at the night sky, eyes glassy, the feathers of the flat bow bolt sticking out from his neck. The blood round his mouth looked black in the moonlight.
Dead,
grunted Severard, most unnecessarily.
A bolt through the neck will do that, said Glockter. Clean him up, would you?
Right you are.
Severard grabbed the bodyguard's feet and hauled them over the parapet of the bridge. Then he took him under the armpits and heaved the body straight over the side with a grunt. So smooth, so clean, so practiced, you can tell he's done it before. There was a splash as the corpse hit the slimy water below. Frost had Hornlack's hands tied firmly behind him now and the bag on. The prisoner squawked through the canvas as he was dragged to his feet. Glockter himself shuffled over to the three sailors, his legs numb after all that time spent standing still in the alley.
And here we are, he said, pulling a heavy purse from his inside coat pocket.
He held it swinging just above the captain's waiting palm.
Tell me, what happened tonight?
The old sailor smiled, weathered face crinkling up like boot leather.
My cargo was spoiling, and we had to be away on the first tide. I told him that. We waited and waited, half the night down by that stinking canal, but would you believe it? The bastard never showed.
Very good. That's the story I'd tell in Westport, if anyone should ask.
The captain looked hurt.
That's how it happened, Inquisitor. What other story could there be?
Glockter let the purse drop, and the money jingled inside.
With the compliments of His Majesty.
The captain weighed the purse in his hand.
Always pleased to do His Majesty a favor.
And he and his two companions turned, all yellow smiles, and made off toward the quay.
Right then, said Glockta. Let's get on with it.
Where are my clothes?
Shouted Hornlack, wriggling in his chair.
I do apologize for that. I know it's quite uncomfortable, but clothes can hide things. Leave a man his clothes, and you leave him pride and dignity, and all kinds of things it's better not to have in here. I never question a prisoner with their clothes on. Do you remember Salem Ruse?
Who?
Salem Ruse. One of your people, a Mercer. We caught him dodging the king's taxes. He made a confession, named a few people. I wanted to talk to them, but they all died.
The merchant's eyes flickered left and right, thinking about his options, trying to guess what we might know.
People die all the time!
Glockter stared at the painted corpse of Juvens behind his prisoner, bleeding bright red paint all over the wall. People die all the time.
Of course, but not quite so violently. I have a notion that someone wanted them dead, that someone ordered them dead. I have a notion it was you.
You've got no proof! No proof! You won't get away with this!
Proof means nothing, Hornlack, but I'll indulge you. Ruth survived. He's just down the hall as it goes, no friends left, blubbering away, naming every Mercer he can think of, or that we can think of, for that matter.
Narrowed eyes, but no reply.
We used him to catch Carpy.
Carpy?
Asked the merchant, trying to look nonchalant.
Surely you remember your assassin? Slightly flabbisterian? Acne scars? Swears a lot? We have him, too. He told us the whole story. How you hired him, how much you paid him, what you asked him to do. The whole story.
Glockter smiled.
He has an excellent memory, for a killer, very detailed.
The fear was showing now, just a trace of it, but Hornlack rallied well.
This is an affront to my guild,
he shouted, with as much authority as he could muster, naked and tied to a chair.
My master, Castanan Colt, will never allow this, and he's a close friend of Superior Kayline.
Shit on Kayline, he's finished. Besides, Colt thinks you're tucked up safe aboard that ship, bound for Westport and far beyond our reach. I don't think you'll be missed for several weeks.
The merchant's face had gone slack.
A great deal could happen in that time. A very great deal.
Hornlack's tongue darted over his lips. He glanced furtively up at Frost and Severard, leaned slightly forward.
So, now comes the bargaining.
Inquisitor,
he said in a wheedling tone,
if I've learned one thing from life, it's that every man wants something. Every man has his price, yes? And we have deep pockets. You have only to name it. Only name it. What do you want?
What do I want?
Asked Glockter, leaning in to a more conspiratorial distance.
Yes. What's this all about? What do you want?
Hornlack was smiling now. A coy, clever little smile.
How quaint, but you won't buy your way out of this. I want my teeth back.
The merchant's smile began to fade.
I want my leg back.
Hornlack swallowed.
I want my life back.
The prisoner had turned very pale.
No? Then perhaps I'll settle for your head on a stick. You've nothing else I want, no matter how deep your pockets are.
Hornlack was trembling slightly now.
No more bluster, no more deals, then we can begin.
Glockter picked up the paper in front of him and read the first question.
What is your name?
Look, Inquisitor,
Frost smashed the table with his fist, and Hornlack cowered in his chair.
Answer his fucking question,
screamed Severard in his face.
Gottfred Hornlach!
Squealed the merchant. Glockter nodded.
Good. You are Athenia member.